Welcome to the Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Jones Zone. Today, we've got Andrea Freeman. She's an interior decorator. She works, her company is called Authentic Home. She's wonderful. I've known her for years. And she's going to walk us through what it means to get an interior designer at your house. So tell us, welcome to the show, Andrea.
Oh, thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. So tell us, how does it start off? You get a call, and let's say someone says, okay, hey, I want you to come over and help me with my house.
Yes.
And take us from there.
So it's a pretty simple process to kind of get a client onboarded. Most of the time I start with a phone call and I really get to know them on the phone call, kind of what their challenges are, their pain points, why they're calling me in the first place, where they have been in their journey with, you know, just style and kind of where they're at right now. And then we set up an appointment. I go out to their home, and that's really when the work really starts to get to know each other. And we, you know, go from there as far as what they're really after, what their lifestyle looks like. I think that's the most important thing. A lot of designers don't, maybe not designers, but actual clients, you know, they watch all the HGTV shows, you know, and so they have this idea of what we're going to do and how it's going to work. So my job is really to educate them from the first phone call, but really when we get to know each other about how the process works, about what we're going to be achieving. But a lot of it is not just about how it looks. It's a lot about how they're going to use their home, how it's going to work for them. And also for me, it's more about capturing who they are in their home. So we're going to talk on that first initial consult. We're going to talk about all of those things, how they're living in the home, who lives in the home, how they want it to feel when they come home. I'm saying home a lot, but that's what it's about, right?
Yeah. Home design.
So. Home. But one of the things that we do on that initial appointment is really walk through their entire space. So even if they're just doing a kitchen or just doing a bedroom, we really walk through the whole home and they tell me their story. They tell me who they are. They tell me what, you know, they're after in their space. And I think that's a really important thing and something that I really try to tell people about is that it's not just about the one space that you're doing. It's about the whole story of your home.
And making it come together. So, yeah. For example, we got two dogs and four kids. That's going to be a lot different than...
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a lot different than a bachelor living in a townhome. How, you know, high-rise lifestyle is going to be very different than a family home. But, you know, that's really what it's about on that first appointment. We're walking through. We're getting to know each other. And then the work begins. Then what I do from that point on is I tailor make a contract for them, just for them. So it's not like a package deal. It's not like I do one cookie cutter design and that's what I do. I really take a look at exactly what they're asking me for. I lay that out and put that together exactly what we're going to be achieving, what the deliverables are going to be. And then I get to work after that initial contract is on contract and I get to work getting everything together for the entire project. And then I propose to them exactly what I think we need to do. I get the right people involved. So, you know, if it's a remodel, I can pair them with the right contractor who's going to take care of the labor part and really project manage the entire project. I guess project management is, you know, pretty concise way to put it. But really, you know, I'm there for them and I guide them through the entire process. And I'm going to backtrack a little bit because after we've, you know, kind of gotten the right people involved, I'm going to present to them everything that we're going to be doing. It's really clear. It's really concise. And then from that point on, it's agreed upon. And then we get the work started. And that can be a long process. It can be a short process. Really depends on the project. So that's you know, the nuts and bolts of it. But then after that, making sure that they're taken care of from the very beginning to the very end and doing a walkthrough with them, even giving them take-home information about how to care for their furniture. You know, I want to be a designer for someone's entire life. So if you're hiring me for, you know, just a little bedroom project, I want to get to know you. We're making a relationship and I want to be your designer for the next project and the next project. And that's the biggest compliment, by the way. Right before this, I was on the phone with a window installer who's, we've done two homes on the same street, you know, and that's the biggest, most wonderful compliment to a designer is not only have we done two homes on the same street because they saw the work, but also I have done one by one, you know, almost every room in the home that my installer was going out to today over a period of a couple years. So it's a really...
Oh, so they don't have to do everything at once.
No, absolutely yeah. not. Actually, that's something I'd love to talk about because a lot of people, again, watch that HGTV and they're like, whole home for $3,000, of course, you know.
I read a study. Read a study yeah. that talked about how you should actually do one room at a time mm-hmm. due to the, just if you want that benefit of the newness and freshness of your house, because after a while it gets kind of old. So if you do one room at a time, that'll prolong that beautiful feeling that you have once your house is redecorated for years and years and years. I don't know how.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think also I do kind of a whole concept approach from the very beginning. So I want the story that we're telling to be throughout the whole home. So we might design all of the spaces together at one time to make sure it's cohesive,
that
make sure
sense.
It's taking a yeah. whole story. But a lot of my clients, you know, they can't afford to do the whole enchilada right from the get-go. So they know where we're going, you know, they know what the whole layout is going to be from the beginning and something to look forward to. For instance, you know, I just mentioned this one client, but, you know, we've done quite a bit in the house, which has been exciting. And now we're getting to some of the other secondary spaces like guest bedrooms and things like that. But we designed them years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah so it's kind of wonderful, you know, to do it in phases because a lot of people, you know, they really want that whole story. They want that comprehensive design, that concept, but it's not achievable for them maybe, you know, from the get-go. So we really do the whole concept of the design, and then we might execute it at a different time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And part yeah. of the thing that makes you even more valuable is that you can get discounts on items and contractors and stuff,
yeah.
and or at least vetted people that are trustworthy.
Well, that's something that, you know, it's so funny because people go, I get a discount. I don't like to think about it that way. What I like to think about it is that we're going to give you the best value. We're going to find the right people for you. And yes, we've worked on dozens of projects. So they're already vetted. We already know that these are the best of the best. We've worked with them time and time again. You know, some of my contractors I've worked for, you know, more than a decade. The companies that I go to regularly for, you know, window treatments, that sort of thing, they are, I mean, I've probably done 100 projects with them, you know, so I know them. I know they do good work. So you're going to get the benefit of that. You're going to get the benefit of already having a full team behind me that has already been proven to have great work, quality work, and at the best value. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about value as we probably go along, but I think that term is better than using the term budget
yeah.
or the
yeah.
term this. I like to think of things as cost effective and value, because when you're doing a home project, when you're doing a design project, most people save up for years and years and years, or they want to do it just once, and you want to do it right. You don't want to, you know, cut where you shouldn't cut. And that's something that I'm kind of like a wizard at, you know, is looking at the project as a whole and saying, this is where we're going to invest. This is where we might be able to have more of a cost-effective approach and really look at it as a big picture.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a landscape designer
mm-hmm.
I've done a podcast.
Yeah,
landscape
yeah.
event, and she talked about how sometimes when they don't use the vetted contractors or contractors
yep.
will, let's say they figure out halfway through that they underbid it and
yeah.
just to get the job.
Absolutely.
And what do? They just leave.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I could tell you a lot of sad stories, you
tell
know.
Tell us one.
Oh, okay, I will tell you one. It's a terrible story, though, but it has a happy ending. I was working with a client a couple years ago, and they wanted to bring their own contractor in, which is absolutely fine. I've met a lot of great contractors through my clients. You know, they might have worked on a different project with them, so they want to bring them in, that sort of thing. Well, they brought this contractor in, and I thought, okay, have you worked with him before? What are his credentials? And they said, you know, he's a family friend. And I always got like the little spidey sense, you know, like, okay,
yeah.
I don't know about that one. But, you know, they were real passionate about using him. So, you know, I provided him specs. I provided drawings. I did meetings with him, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that's what we can do, you know, when somebody wants to work with somebody, you know, that they brought in, and that's great. But they were on a vacation, and they got back from the vacation and the contractor did not read the drawings correctly at all. Mm. He ordered completely the wrong tile, completely the wrong stone, and he tiled the entire bathroom with the wrong tile. I mean, we're talking like,
so it's a slightly, there's a slightly flawed system. You do actually have to read the directions.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's really hard for some people. No, just kidding. But anyways, yeah, it was terrible. It was a terrible experience, you know, to have that. And my clients luckily understood that that had no reflection on me. You know, we had the drawings. We had them digitally. We had them printed for him. I mean, he had everything that at his disposal that he needed. So anyways, it had a happy ending. He ended up fixing it and, you know, he was able to do that. But, you know, it cost them time on the project, and time is money sometimes, you know, because it delays everything else from being installed. So that was kind of a terrible thing that happened. Had a happy ending. He fixed it in the end. But, you know, it was a lot of headache for them. And I tried to take the headache out of the process for my clients. And one of the ways we do that is pairing with contractors that I know that I have a relationship with, so that we can make sure that the communication is really clear throughout the whole project.
Well, that makes a ton of sense. So what defines your approach to interior design? I'm reading my nice questions.
Good. I'm going to read my nice notes that I printed for myself to remind myself. No, I'm just kidding. No, my approach is extremely client forward, I would say, because when I look at design, the whole reason I got into it is to make people's lives better, you know? And for me, it's very client approach. I'm never going to push my agenda or my design style on somebody else. So I'm going to go back to my tagline that I created for the company, which is curated, elevated, and inspired interiors. And I really believe that. And when I was coming up with that tagline, I was thinking about how I want to present, you know, what I do. And curated really just means being really thoughtful about how I'm putting something together for someone, and then also honoring what they already have in their home and who they are and putting that together. Elevated just making it better, right? Lifting it up, making it the best it can be. And inspired, obviously, I love inspiring my clients through their home. The home is, to me, and I sound a little preachy, but you know, you mentioned there's studies coming out about different things. There's a big study coming out right now about how our homes affect us. It's a lot more powerful than a lot of people gave credit to.
I'm not surprised, because when I'll meet with clients prepping their house to go on the market, something as simple as paint color.
Yeah.
In fact, I had this great thing happen a couple of years ago. I had the identical floor plan of these two properties on the market.
Yeah.
And they were identical. So exact same floor plan. And they both came on the market at the same time. The one really major difference was the flooring on one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool flooring. It was just really nice flooring. And I'm talking about, this is a couple few years back, and the prices were in the 700s. And the one with the cool flooring actually sold for, I want to say, a good $40,000 more than the other one.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, frankly, the one with the less cool flooring probably had some newer appliances, but they were identical, same exact floor plan. It was just that flooring that got the client $40,000 more, because it was so appealing.
Yeah.
And it was such a great vibe, right? When you walk in, you get that vibe, but colors as well. I mean, colors of houses. I mean, it just in selling, I know that's not what you're here for necessarily.
No, but I'm interested though. You know, I work a lot with real estate agents and professionals, and I'm always interested in what you guys are seeing also. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I oftentimes also will visit new home builders, because new home builders, they study this like a science, because
they're
profits. So they know what's in, what's out. In fact, funny, I saw one in North Orange County, and I think they had not granite, but the quartz.
Yeah.
I said, oh, this quartz and stainless steel. I said, oh, it's quartz and stainless steel. This is phenomenal. I said, God, this looks so good. You guys really know how to do it. I said, and they said, where are you going after this? She goes, oh, we're going to another in, I think it was Riverside. And they said, we got another new bill. I said, you just do the same thing. She goes, no, actually, we don't use stainless steel out there. We'll just use white appliances or black appliances. And then we use more of a different substance. Point being is they really study it and find out what is the market loving and what are they paying for.
Yeah. And also the demographic of where the homes are, you know, for instance, that's exact example, you know, in North Orange County, this is what is appealing in the Inland Empire. This might be what is appealing, you know, Yeah, the home buyers. Yeah.
So, do you have a signature style?
No. Like, no. I want to talk about this because this is huge right now in social media and Instagram, and especially in the, you know, just like the TV shows. You see like the same style over and over and over again,
right?
The
whites and the grays.
Yeah, and there's some great designers. I'm not going to name names, but they have a signature style. I can look at a home and go, that's blue and white with a lot of woven textures. That's this company. Or that's this designer. And that's wonderful if somebody is looking exactly for that. I really feel that I design for my clients. I use the same principles. I use the same process. I use the same care and thoughtfulness with the design, you know, but it's for them. It's their home. And so I really try to capture who they are. So my signature style is their signature style. So that's how that's a little different approach than some other designers. And you'll look on my website and you'll look at the projects and be like, wow, they're really different. I got a contemporary. I have a traditional. I have, you know, a beach house, these sort of things, because I don't believe a one size fits all.
No,
all.
I mean,
how boring would that be, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you got to be, you know, catered to your
yeah.
client, of course.
So my signature style is client signature style, I guess. Yeah.
Good answer. The yeah. client's always right. So.
Yeah. Well, it's really about drawing out who they are. And a lot of times, also social media, I sound like a hater right now, but, you know, there's all these videos and things out there like, you too could be a designer. Just follow these three easy steps and do this paint color and do this wall color. But is that speaking to who you are? And can you execute that in a way that's going to make your life better? That's why you hire a designer.
saving pennies will cost you dollars.
Yeah, sometimes.
Tell us more about the trend. What are the upcoming trends in interior design?
Yeah, so there's a lot of trends going on. I just recently went to Sherwin-Williams Color Mix, which they do every year, which is the new colors and all of that. And that's always really fun because they have, you know, the people who study this and the forecasters and all of that. But color is coming back, and I'm so excited about it because I've always been a color person. So, you know, everyone's saying goodbye to gray. And I would say also that doesn't mean goodbye to gray as like a whole tone or a whole color, but what people are embracing is more color, warmer colors. You know, they're getting away from the cookie cutter, like gray flooring, gray walls, white cabinets, white countertops. What? People are being more thoughtful about how they're doing things. I'm sorry. You were
I was
say
just
going
to say that it's funny because I was talking to my stager once about the colors, and it seemed as though taupe tan was in for a good 15 years, for crying out loud. So actually, when those grays and blues and whites came, it was kind of refreshing. But you're right; it has been.
It's about 10 years right now on the cusp of that, but it started. Yeah, no. So it goes in cycles, you know. And you know what's so funny, and I'm just going to call myself out. I don't like brown. Brown is like one of my least favorite tones to work with in, but brown is forecasted to have a major comeback. Browns, beiges, tans again. Yeah. So it's so funny because, you know, we saw that, you know, a while ago. Another one that I'm kind of excited, though, about is curved furniture. We've been seeing this for a couple of years, but apparently it's really starting to take off. But curved furniture, not the boxy style of furniture. Soft lines. I love soft sofas with curved backs, curved arms. So the boxy, you know, lines are coming out, which is, you know, it's kind of nice. I mean, there's a place for them. And if people like them, trends are trends, you know, trends are meant to just kind of guide people if they want to be part of that. I'm not a designer that designs with trends, but I like to know what they are. You know, one of the trends that I think is really important to talk about, and I think this really came out of the pandemic, is more people are very interested in artisan products, products that are one of a kind, products that are custom made things for them, custom made companies that really go back to the old ways of manufacturing, you know, by hand. So that's a trend, but to me, that's not really ever not been a trend because I love bringing art, you know, real craftsman products and custom products all the time. But I'm really excited to hear that that's kind of on the rise, that more people are interested in that. Also, I would say things that are out right now, and you see this in a lot of different articles, because it was so saturated in the market, the whole farmhouse look, you know, is kind of on its way out. And if you like that, that's great. You know, I have a friend who always says, don't yuck somebody else's yum, you know? So like if somebody likes something, that's fantastic. That's great. And I love that. And I will embrace it. But I will say that the farmhouse trend is kind of just been oversaturated. Everybody is doing that, right? You know, everybody kind of watched Chip and Joanna and they, you know, they followed suit and it was everywhere. It's everywhere in every like major marketplace and retailer, but people are starting to kind of come out of that being, you know, a whole style.
Is there a trend? I'm kind of reminded to when I come across a house that was built in the 50s.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they're built in the 50s. So they're older, they need some updating, et cetera. One of the first things I do is I pull up a corner of the carpet, the 15-year-old carpet, to see if there's those darn hardwood floors.
Yeah.
And
I'm
go,
like,
okay.
Yeah, that's the best moment.
I was just going to say, so there are certain things that are kind of timeless. And would you put kind of wood floors into that category?
Absolutely into that category. And that's the best when I'm working with a real estate agent, you know, and a home buyer has just purchased the home and we're doing the little walkthrough and we peel up the little carpet and there's beautiful hardwood and we can refinish it. I mean, I love that moment.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Timeless things like that. And
timeless things, yeah.
And the irony is of those homes that were built in the 50s, it's funny, I found out too, that when they were purchased, they came with the hardwood floors were standard. And if you wanted carpet, you had to pay extra.
Yes.
And it's flip-flop.
Yeah.
Because
and now it's the opposite way.
Take out that carpet. Yeah. I got a hardwood floor guy that comes over. They're just gorgeous.
And also, this will, I think, be of interest to you and in the real estate market, because a lot of builders were doing the whole great room concept, you know, the living, dining, kitchen, family room,
kind of
all in one encapsulated space. And that has really been, gosh, I would say probably 10 years builders have been building homes that way. And we're seeing the return of walls, which I think is really a fantastic thing. And I think that's also a thing that kind of was born out of the pandemic times, because when people were home and they needed to all be together, they realized that there was no privacy. There was no little space for them to do their work because it was one big room. So I think we're going to see a real return to walls and more defined rooms.
Interesting, because I've joked the last 5 years how we've gone away from that and going towards the open spaces. Like you mentioned, I said, gosh, what are they going to do? Pretty soon just have four walls.
Mm-hmm.
Four walls and that's it. So that'll
loft style living.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of exciting that people are starting to see that. And it doesn't mean that we'll go completely all the way backwards to, you know, everything having a wall and a door. It might just mean that we just have, you know, a little bit more of, you know, a wall in between the living room and dining room, or vice versa between the kitchen and this space. But I think it's kind of, you know, something that people realize they didn't have a lot of privacy, a lot of defined space.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what do you draw inspiration from when you embark on a new project? Are there specific sources like nature, art, travel, etc., that consistently inspire your creativity?
Yeah.
While we're getting deeper?
No, I mean, I'm a little hippy dippy. I think inspiration is everywhere. It really can be. And some of the greatest ideas that I've had have just come out of the middle of nowhere and go, wow, that was amazing, little inspiring moment. But I think really there are a couple things that really always get me inspired. One is art. And just going to a new art gallery or going to a museum, usually something maybe that I don't really enjoy, you know, a certain type of art. But if I go to see an exhibit and it just inspires me, you know, the artist's story, what I'm seeing, you know, everything about it. One of my favorite places to get inspiration is the Getty up in L.A. I love taking myself there for a day and just looking at everything. One, that building is absolutely beautiful and built. Oh, man, it's very inspiring. If you haven't been there, go there. If you live in Southern California. But also specifically historic homes. I love history.
What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite? I have a favorite decade of fashion and everything.
Okay, what's yours?
1940s and 30s. I just, the clothes, the cars, the houses, all of them in the 40s. You can't find a bad design. They're just, it's so, I just love it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it would be hard for me to just pick one because I have several, but I love mid-century modern, which we have a lot of in Orange County and Palm Springs and all of that. But then also the turn of the century. If you've never been there, there's a house in Pasadena, the Gamble House, and it was owned by Procter & Gamble Company, the founders of it. was built by Green and Green, the architects. But the interesting thing about that house is that they also crafted the furniture for the home. So you can take a docent tour throughout it. And it's really incredible how thoughtful in the planning they were. So as they were planning the exterior, the interior of the home, they were planning all the furniture and all the fixtures and everything all at once. And you could really see how impactful that was. And they were very concerned, too, about how useful things were and how long they were going to last. So for me, you know, turn of the century, arts and crafts movement, and then mid-century modern. Well, I wanted to also talk about what inspires me when it comes to a client, too, those are things that inspire me in general and also kind of, you know, filter down to what I'm doing for a client, you know. But also, I really, when I'm starting with a client, I try to hone in on something that's important to them to start my inspiration for their home. So whether that's, you know, a place they've traveled to, I've done that many times, you know, couple empty nesters, you know, their kids are going and they're looking to redo the house. They just went on a trip to Italy or they just went on a trip to London and they were really inspired by that place. You know, we'll really talk about why they were inspired there and, you know, how to maybe hone in on that feeling, you know, art. I have a lot of clients that collect art and, you know, that's wonderful because they've already, you know, I can look at an art piece and go, wow, you know, tell me why you purchased this piece. Tell me why the artist speaks to you. And they will, you know, give me the story of that. And that really starts me off on a trajectory, on a direction for them. But that doesn't always mean that everybody always has the answers to that, right? You know, I'll walk into somebody's house and they'll be like, I don't know what inspires me or I don't know how to
get
there.
That's when you walk into my house.
Yeah. No, but, you know, then we try to get to know them as a person and what inspires them, you know, in a different way, maybe not aesthetically, maybe not style. Yeah. So that's where I gain my inspirations from.
Well, now how do you stay ahead of all the industries constantly evolving? I mean, there's any strategies or methods that you employ to adapt to the design approach of changing market trends?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I've always been super passionate about is making sure that I'm always educated about what's going on because our industry, one of the things that makes it super fun and probably why I was drawn to it, it's never boring. There's always something new. There's always new products. There's always new innovation. So what I try to do is make sure that I am continuing my education. So whether that's, you know, making sure I'm up to date on products and going to meetings with the manufacturers, doing factory tours, trade shows, you know, just making sure that I'm educated about what's happening in lots of different areas of our industry, you know, because there's so much to our industry. There's, you know, everything from the flooring you're putting down and the paint on the walls to the light fixtures to fabrics, all of that. That's a lot to keep educated on. But I really try to make sure to make time for that because it's really important that I am the most knowledgeable I can be when I'm coming out and doing a project with somebody that I know what's going on. Yeah, and also innovations. There's a lot of innovations right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm reminded about color, just even color coordination. When I first moved in my current house and it had granite and we got the house painted and I said, let's mix it up a little. This was years ago. And I painted the kitchen one color. I painted it yellow. And I was just shocked because I said, okay, paint this room yellow, the rest of it another color, the rest of the house. And I came home and it had this granite and the granite went from being brown to I come home and it's with a yellow background. It looked pink and peach.
Yep.
And I could not believe the trick the brain was doing on me because, and I called the painter. I said, look, you know, I know I have to pay you again, but please come back over here. We're going to paint it a different color because it just completely ruined the granite.
Yeah.
Having the wrong color.
Yeah. Because it really is about the whole picture. A lot of people don't think about that. I'm always thinking about that. I'm always thinking about the big picture. So yeah, if you're picking one color, that is going to affect every single aspect of that room. You know?
I just had no idea, though, that it would literally change the color of the granite.
Yeah. Well, it's actually changing the way you see it.
I know. It doesn't change it. I guess I shouldn't have said literally. So it changes.
Literally changed the color. Okay. No, it's the way you perceive it. Absolutely. Yeah.
It was amazing. So what's your approach to understanding your client's need and preferences? You kind of talked about that. It's just really a conversation with your client.
Yeah. It's really in-depth understanding of who they are and how they use their space. That's really what it comes down to it. And also how they want their space to feel. You know, a lot of And that's a really telling question that I ask every single client is, how do you want to feel in this space? Do you want to be energized by this space? Do you want this space to feel calm, serene, you know, that kind of emotional tie to it? You know, it really is very telling about what they actually want in the space.
I'm reminded too, has this ever happened to you? I'm reminded of a stager once. I was helping the stager and she said, Here, help me move the couch in this direction and this, that, and the other. And I thought to myself at the time, I thought, that doesn't sound like it's going to look good at all. And she said, she was a friend of mine. She said, get over here, idiot. Just help me move it. So I went over there and moved it, helped her move it. And she placed a couple trees and some other pieces of furniture. And I stepped back and thought, wow, that looks awesome. And it would not have occurred to me at all. So I'm guessing that, has that happened to you where you told a client, look, this would be a good idea. Do this, this, or that. And they kind of were apprehensive, or?
I'm very convincing. No, I'm just kidding. No, of course they're apprehensive, especially if it's like a space plan or a layout that they can't visualize. They can't imagine it in their space. I like to really talk about the why we're doing this, why it works, why this works here, why this works here. I give them visuals, you know, visual layouts. We've even done, you know, I've had international clients in the past, language barrier. And so we'll do like a photorealistic 3D rendering so they can really like visualize the space. But yeah, absolutely. Sometimes, you know, they do have to trust me a little bit. Yeah, even after all of that, this is exactly why we're going to do this. There is an element of trust, but, you know, the trust comes from experience. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've seen lots of different layouts and, you know, I can pinpoint what's going to work for them.
Yeah. My daughter was an art major.
Yeah.
And I was just, I don't know how we came up with this conversation, but we were looking at the iPhone, the Apple and the design. And I said, that's interesting. When the leaf goes that way and the bite's over here. She says, oh yeah, I forgot what she called it. But she said, no, there's something that your brain gravitates towards. In other words, you like spatial recognition, but space. So the leaf went the opposite direction of the bite out of the apple. And that was very purposeful. That wasn't just an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because our brains like symmetry or something like that.
Yeah, and sometimes also negative space. You know, sometimes our brains and our eyes do not want all of the clutter. And so the way something is laid out is really important to make sure it balances. Yeah.
Yeah, the balance.
Yeah, the balance. Yeah.
Well, that's another reason that you would be needed. So, okay, more of my little questions that we come up with.
Yeah.
What excites you about the future of interior design? Here's my next question.
Yeah, sure. Gosh, there's a lot that is very exciting. Some stuff that's very interesting and we're not sure about how to feel. Mostly AI. You know, people are talking about AI. I'm sure you're hearing it more and more in conversations with other professionals. I don't think that AI is going to take my place anytime soon. I think it's a useful tool. I think it's interesting to be able to maybe utilize it for drawings and different things like that. But really, I don't think it's going to take the space of a well-trained interior designer who can do some different things than a computer is going to do, of course, but also who can execute a project. You know, circling back to the project management part, a lot of my job is project management. Knowing it's like a symphony, really. It's like sometimes I feel like the conductor and this is, you know, I've got to make sure all the parts and pieces are moving and the furniture is ordered and this is measured and this is getting installed on this day. And AI is not going to do that, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to show up and make sure to have a conversation with the tile installer.
Well, not yet.
Yeah. Well, not
I'm
yet.
Just kidding.
No, that's true. I'll probably be long gone, hopefully, by the time the robots completely
when they take
over. But another innovation, which is kind of interesting because it's kind of a return to nature, a return to wellness and natural materials. And also people are thinking a lot about what's going into their home, especially building materials and things like that. There's new innovations right now where we're using more natural materials and combining them with other materials to make them stronger and put it together in such a way that it's environmentally friendly. A lot of people are thinking about wellness. Wellness is, I just went to a panel discussion about wellness last week and it was fascinating because people are really taking the time to think about how they live in their homes and how they can use their homes to achieve more. So for example, like, you know, this is not like a fun subject to talk about, but we have an epidemic of mental illness in our country. You know, it's really pervasive. And a lot of times, sometimes it comes down to the home and having make sure that you have a space that you can go and be quiet in or meditate or do the yoga or do whatever you need to do. That's becoming a bigger conversation than it's ever been.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. 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 It was really enlightening. They had some, I went to a panel and some top designers in the field talking about wellness. And, you know, and again, that's always been my philosophy. I want people to live better lives in their home, but how to think about that in terms of, you know, some different stressors that we face in today's world.
Well, that makes sense because, I mean, you can walk into a house like the house I described with the different flooring and just your whole vibe, your whole mood changes. So, I mean, it's probably the most important part of why you get a designer.
Yeah. There's so many reasons.
What's the most rewarding aspect? I mean, you must love your job.
I do love my job. Yeah, I absolutely love my job. I have a different job every day, you know, and that keeps me like fresh because I'm always working on different types of projects, small, big projects, different people. I love people. I love getting to know people and pairing them with the right things for their space is a privilege. It really is. I look at it that way all the time, but I think the most rewarding aspect of my job is knowing that their lives are going to be better because of what we created together.
And they really will.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. No, it's great. And that's the biggest high, you know, is when I've just finished a project and I'm walking them through, you know, the big reveal. I'm tearing up because I just did a reveal a couple weeks ago. It was really personal to me. It was a grandma and she had the kiddos over a lot. And so she wanted to use one of the bedrooms, the guest bedroom, as their room, you know. And they needed to sleep quite a few because she's got quite a few grandkids. And when we talked about the inspiration for the room, she was really like, well, I you know, I don't know. And we talked and I said, what is something that you share with your grandkids, you know, something personal? And she said, you know what? I read Winnie the Pooh to them all the time, like classic Winnie the Pooh stories, you know, and my dad did that. And it's something that is kind of a tradition. And I said, that's it. We're going to do this room as classic Winnie the Pooh, you know, well, the 100 Acre Woods. So, yeah. So when we showed her the presentation, she teared up and I teared up. And that was just the presentation. But it took almost 2 years to get that room realized because they were building the house from scratch. So when she got to see it for the first time, oh my gosh, tears, like just flooding down tears from both of us because it was so personal, you know, because what we created is going to be used. It's living art. Those kids are going to be read stories to, bedtime stories, and play in that room and stay over at their grandparents and make memories. And for me, it's like, that's how could you get better than that? That's like the best thing ever. So that's the most rewarding thing is making people cry. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I'm reminded to, gosh, around 10 years ago or so, I was showing houses near Disneyland.
Yeah.
And I went into this, maybe it was a little longer than 10 years. Anyway, and I went to this one house and it was, and you know, when you sell a house, you typically go in and you want to neutralize everything in terms of, you just want to neutralize it.
So yeah, it's appealing, a different approach.
Yeah, it's appealing to the broadest market. Well, I went to this house and it was all Disney. It had Mickey Mouse in the living room, Daffy in the family room, this, that, and the other. And I was looking at everything. I'm thinking, but this isn't very neutralized. And then it occurred to me, it was an Airbnb.
Yeah.
And it was just perfect because you know, obviously next to Disneyland. And I've heard since then about Airbnbs being such, with that kind of design, it
right,
perfect.
Right.
I think it's sold for a very high amount.
But, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I digress here.
No, that's okay. Yeah, no, there's a lot of fun themed Airbnbs in Orange County.
Have you done Airbnbs?
I've done a few. Yeah. I've done a few, and it's fun and in different way to approach design, you know. And again, you were just asking about the most rewarding part of my job. It's never boring. Sometimes I've done Disney themes. I've done Star Wars themes. I've done, you know, different things that are kind of outside the box of what normal, you know, everyday design is. But that's what keeps it fresh and interesting, right?
Yeah, no, I think that would be phenomenal. So what are there any ethical considerations or environmental principles that guide your design choices?
Yeah, absolutely. We were just talking about wellness. So sustainability is a big conversation, which we kind of touched on. One of the things that I think is often left out of that conversation about sustainability is really being thoughtful with the things that you already own. So, for example, you know, I have clients that might have a beautiful antique dining room, but it's the wrong finish. You know, it's too orangey and it's not going to go with what we're going to be doing. But we can talk to a refinisher about refinishing that and giving it a new lease on its life. That, to me, is more sustainable than even purchasing a craftsman-built custom table because you're still using materials. And so prolonging the life of what we have already in place, or really thinking and being considerate about the products that we're choosing, being more, we used to, and I'm sure, you know, you grew up in a house like this, like our parents didn't change out the dining table like every 10 years. You know,
oddly enough,
did yours?
Well, no, my mom did. She okay. did change the furniture around.
Oh, really?
Twice a year.
Okay.
And she changed the living room, the family, summertime, we'd move downstairs. Oddly enough, and that's probably very unique. I'm sure that doesn't
happen
a lot.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
She's sharp cookie. But I'm sorry, go ahead. What?
Oh, no, I was just saying that a lot of times, like our parents and grandparents held on to the same bedroom set that they bought when they got married, or they got the dining table, you know, at a certain time, and that was their dining room table for life. They hung on to things. I used to call it more heirloom, you know, heirloom items. They really hung on to things for a long time. And that's not to say that you need to use your grandparents' dining room table. What I'm saying is that they were very thoughtful in the way that they selected those pieces, and they had the mindset that these were going to be around for a while, and they weren't going to be something that they changed out all the time. I think we've changed our mindset as furniture, other things are disposable, you know, they change with trends, they change with this. And that can be true, but you can also be very thoughtful about some of the key pieces in your home and see them as a long-term piece or a long-term investment into that. And by not changing out everything, you know, every couple of years, that's actually more sustainable than even purchasing something that is, you know, 100% environment friendly, et cetera, et cetera. So really thinking about when you're making a purchase of anything, being very thoughtful that purchase is going to be something that you love and, you know, transforms with you and your lifestyle. That's not to say you can't change things out, but maybe looking at things a little bit differently, I think, is a part that's missing from the sustainable conversation, right? We want to talk about, you know, we want to talk about materials and sourcing things that are environmentally friendly, which I 100% am on board with. But I also like to take a look at, well, what are the pieces that we're going to be purchasing, you know, for this design concept that are going to be pieces that you love for a very, very long time, you know, and maybe some other ones that'll be switched out over the years? And what is it that maybe that we already have to work with that we can make better and we can elevate it and make it something different so that it has a new lease on its life, you know?
Yeah, it sounds as though that even more affordable sometimes repurposing a table.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be, you know, and I just like to think of things a little differently, you know, and I've always been that designer. I've always had a sentimental heart for people's heirlooms and antiques and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it comes into play quite a bit. But I think if we're going to talk about being environmentally friendly, we're going to talk about sustainability. We also need to talk about reusing things.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So tell me this, how about budgets? I think oftentimes people, they think, oh, interior designer, my goodness, what am I, Warren Buffett? I mean, what am I going to afford? Describe a project where you had to work with a strict budget. What strategies did you employ to achieve a remarkable outcome without exceeding the financial constraints?
Yes. Let's talk about this. No, actually, I love this question. I love this conversation because when I think about budget, I actually like to think about investment range. And what that means to me is that what is it that you want to invest in your home and where do you want to invest it, right? So I'll tell you about a project that I did recently where this did come up because you asked me, you know, about a strict budget. So I really believe that design, I'm going to get myself in a corner here, but I don't believe that design is a luxury. I believe that good interior design is accessible to a lot of different people that might not have considered it. And one of the reasons I think this is because we are using the principles of design to make things better, to elevate them, right? A project that I did, this was last year, was kind of unique. My client was renting, actually, but she had been in this rental property for over 10 years, you know, And she hadn't done anything furniture-wise or anything because it was always a temporary kind of thing. And, you know, maybe I'll move and maybe I won't. And then she had this realization that she probably wouldn't and she would like her space to work better for her, right? But she didn't have a Warren Buffett kind of budget, you know? Absolutely not. It was a lot different than that. So we made really thoughtful choices for her that would make a big impact. So investing where it would make a huge impact. You mentioned your yellow wall color.
Yeah.
Paint is very affordable and paint can be transformative with a color palette, with the right color palette. So that's where we started is really introducing color. We got, of course, permission to do that. But also we changed out the light fixtures. They were incredibly dated. And light fixtures are something that you can change out pretty easily. You can take down an old fixture. Even if you're renting, you can go and you can put that away in storage and switch it back out when you want to move out. But light fixtures can make a huge difference. Paint makes a huge difference. And then we made some really good furniture choices for her that were in an affordable range, but again, were furniture pieces that she's going to have for a very long time. So that's kind of how we approached that. I have an interesting story about how I approach my investment range that I like to tell. So yeah. if you'll allow me. So in the 90s, Sharon Stone went to the Oscars and she was wearing this impeccable suit and she was on the red carpet. And they asked her, like, where's your outfit from? And she said, the suit is Armani, the t-shirt is Gap. And she explained, like, why would I spend like, you know, I don't know what, I'm not a big fashion person, but like, why would I spend $1,000 on a white t-shirt,
right,
when it's about the suit, right? It's about this great suit that I'm wearing. So for me, I love telling that story because that's how I like to approach my design. It's like, where can we splurge or spend the money that makes the most sense and makes you the best, you know, overall, you know, return? And then where are we going to use the Gap t-shirt, you know?
Right, right.
Where are we going to, you know, so if somebody's doing great flooring, yeah, that's a big investment. That's going to be where we put some of our dollars. And then maybe we look at some other things and we go a little more cost effective. It's really, again, about the big picture. So I am very conscious of what my clients want to invest. And then I kind of hold their hand through it and say, okay, well, here's where that makes sense. And here's where this makes sense. And here's where we're really going to be realistically and how to approach it. You know, we also talked at the very beginning about doing things in phases. So yeah, I approach it, one, where are we going to spend the money where it makes the most sense? And two, do we want to do this in phases? Or do we want to do, you know, this project and how we're going to, you know, cut it up? And yeah, and overall, I try to make it really accessible for them. You know, I am not interested. I know a lot of people have this misconception that I'm just like willy-nilly, like, yeah, I have this joke too, because with this one client, he was very conscious about budget. And he'd always be like, well, how much is that going to cost me? How much is that going to cost me? So I had this joke. I said, $1 million. And everything was $1 million. So he'd be like, well, how much is adding that going to cost me? $1 million. So the other day we were almost done with the project. And he goes, you know, I'd like to add like a couple more chairs over there. You know, I think that would be nice. He goes, well, how much does that cost me? I said, $1 million. And before I could get it out of my mouth, he goes, $1 million. So, you know, it's kind of a little bit of an inside joke. But I like to talk to people about the fact that interior design can be accessible. It doesn't need to be this big, you know, that just millionaires and billionaires can afford it. I think it can be impactful for a lot of different people.
Yeah, I tell you, just the, like you had mentioned, just colors alone.
Yeah, I do color consultations too, you know.
I was just going to ask you that.
No, but I mean, that's a really good introductory way to work with a designer is just putting a whole house color palette together or an exterior color palette together. And really that gives you a lot of direction in the way that you're going to go. So yeah, I do that. You know, it's a small project, but it's really great and it's really rewarding. And then they have a place to start from.
And that would be considered possibly your kind of your lowest.
Yeah, like an introductory.
Budget. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do a color consult. Yeah. And I tell you, right, after seeing those colors, like I mentioned about turning my granite pink.
Yeah.
it's worth it. So interior design often involves balancing aesthetics and functionality. How do you strike this balance? And Sharon, do you have an example that you can share of maybe a project?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things is that the balance between aesthetics and how it works is not like negotiable anymore, right? We live differently than we lived even a decade ago. We do a lot of different tasks in our home that maybe we didn't before. You know, a lot of people are doing hybrid work schedules. A lot of people, I've done a homeschool actually a while back ago during the pandemic. I transformed a basement into a homeschooling center, you know, because that's what my client needed at the time. So balancing aesthetics and functionality, I don't think is a negotiable anymore. It has to work together. It has to weave together. And another example of that is, you know, the hybrid work schedule. A lot of people were working from home.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't, you know, we live in Orange County and we like to, you know, think about all those homes we see on all those, you know, real estate shows and those giant homes. But there are a lot of smaller spaces in Orange County. And one of them that I did a while back ago, my client was working from home sometimes going to the office. There was no available space for really a home office. So we captured some of the dining space and made that into a home office. But we did so in a way that aesthetically made sense. It wasn't like we just plopped a desk in the middle of the dining room. We completely reconfigured the layout of the dining room. We made sure that the workspace coordinated with the color scheme and worked with all of the tones so that it's seamless. You know, of course, if you're looking at it too closely, you're like, yeah, that's a desk, not a credenza. But but that's what works for the client, and that's what needed to happen.
And you have to look closely. It's not obvious.
Yeah, no, it's not obvious. Yeah. It's kind of a little bit of a trick now. It's like being a magician, like putting all these little storage spaces into things that people don't notice, you know, like built-ins and things like that. We can do a lot with that.
Yeah, I'm sure that the evolution of lifestyles changing, mm-hmm. where so many home offices and people work from home and everything has changed your industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it changed our industry. I think a lot of people are now going back, you know, to the office and doing different things, but they still like to be able to have a space to do that in. And a lot of people really kind of discovered different things about themselves that they like, you know. For example, like I have a friend, she was a workaholic before the pandemic. She was always working. And then during the pandemic, dedicated more time to art, you know, more time to creating. And so creating a space to create art in was an important thing. And I think that a lot of people are thinking of their space differently. I know, I think I've said this a couple times, so I hope I'm not being redundant that people are looking at space differently. But balancing the aesthetics and the functionality of that is a challenge, but it is something that we have done a lot of and that a designer can help you with.
Well, this is more on a, just, I'm curious, what is the, what's the most money someone spent with you on a design? Well, not necessarily. I mean, so for example, I know. Well, I think it's something people would want to know. I mean, we all want to know. There used to be a great show called Lifestyles of the Rich.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I think people would like to know, would be interested in that. Or, and again, we can edit this out if
you
don't have
no.
a good answer.
I'm just having a hard time coming up with a number for you because the reason I'm having a hard time is because if we're doing like a whole home project, right, like a build from the ground up project and then all the furniture and all the fixtures and all the things, it usually happens in phases. So I'm trying to like calculate in my mind how much it all was.
But 500,000 is that high?
No.
Oh, say no more.
Not for something that is like completely, you know, remodel and furniture and, you know, down to the window treatments and the soap bottles and the bathrooms. I would say 500 to a million for something like that. Now that is not every client.
No,
yeah.
I get it.
And not then, every client.
Well, and then on the flip side, I guess a color consultation.
Yeah. Yeah. That,
those are the two ends.
Yeah. Those are the two ends. And those start at $400. So yeah, I'm between $400 and $1 million. Does that give you a better reference? I think also that is a good point. So I always tailor make, you know, what I'm doing in the design process to what the project is. So if it's a color consult, that's a lot different than a whole, you know, remodel, whole home concept. That's very, very different. So that's something that I talk to everybody in the discovery call, and I'm very transparent about it, too. I'm not one of those people, well, it might be around this, because that doesn't do anybody any good, right? I'm very honest from the get-go. Like, you're asking for this, it's probably going to be around here. I won't be able to really know until we crunch numbers, but I'm very, very transparent from the very beginning about what I think the costs are going to be. Well, I don't like to hide anything.
That's true within the industry. It's just expectations.
Set the expectations because I don't want anybody to be disappointed. I really don't.
And you can do anything. I mean, someone can come to you. Forgive me for some possible.
I do everything. No, I'm just kidding.
Naive questions. But I mean, someone could say, like Tuscany, I want mid-century modern. Tell me some styles. I can't even come up with
you
names.
You don't even know some styles.
I know. Tell me five styles.
Yeah. So I just did a home that was more in the, I would say, modern organic kind of style. I did a home last year that was really fun. It was in a Japanese Zen style. I did an arts and crafts style recently. You know, most of the time in Orange County, especially Orange County, people want more of a transitional look, something that's going to appeal. So they're not doing real theme, you know, type of projects, but, you know, just more of a transitional clean and modern and coastal is really prevalent in Orange County. But
and that sounds to me like then they're paying attention to trends.
Yeah. It's Orange County.
Yeah. We're very trendy over here.
We're very trendy.
That's true. Yeah. You dig deep. Well, all right. Well, I tell you, I've just loved this. Obviously, selling houses, this is really close to my heart, having these designs, et cetera. Is there anything I left out? Is there anything you wanted to talk about that I didn't ask you?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about how I collaborate with real estate professionals.
Sweet.
Yeah, because that's what this is, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So over the years, there've been a lot of different ways that I've worked with real estate agents. But last year, I honed in on something that I think is kind of special. A lot of homeowners are going from a different space into a new space, obviously, but a lot of times their furnishings are not going to work. Their style that they had before might not work with the style of the home, and they're not quite sure how to really make their new house a home. And I had a specific client, and this is really why I created this. That was exactly the case. They moved from, you know, a smaller house to a bigger house. And they had some great pieces of furniture that really worked with this space, but she wasn't sure how to really put it together. You know, what kind of art was going to work, what kind of area rugs were going to work in this space, how to really put it together to make it feel like a home, because they had it that way for over a year because they were so in that kind of analysis paralysis, I will say. You know, there's so many choices out there. She wasn't really sure which direction to go. So what we did is we came in and we made a list of exactly what needed to happen. Yes, the sofa was going to work. Yes, that dining room table worked great, but let's put a new light fixture in. Let's put some new colors in. Let's put some new art in. And so that wasn't an overall huge investment range into the product because she had a lot to work with, but it was really she needed the concept to put it together. So we were able to do that. We were able to select the things that she needed to really put it together. We were able to have a team come in and rearrange the furniture and another team come in and put up the light fixture and the draperies and really transform that whole space for really cost effective overall, you know, as far as most projects, you know, could be a little bit higher. And so I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I think that a lot of people need this kind of service. And so I started talking to more real estate agents about that. So I do, for new home buyers, I do offer a free consultation, which is not something that I offer to everybody. But if they're, you know, if they're listening to this podcast, that could be something that they might be interested. They should definitely get in touch with me because we can really do those projects pretty quickly. You know, we haven't been able to do projects as quickly as we used to before shipping delays and all of the fun things that happened to us. And but those kind of projects, they have a quick turnaround and a big impact on how it all works out. So I call that the welcome home package. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. A lot of times also I work with real estate agents to get the house market ready, you know, and of course there's the big stagers. I know you work with a staging company. They have a lot of inventory. They can come in and they can really transform that space. I think a niche that I have is really coming into a space that is going to be lived in through the process and being able to talk to the homeowners about what needs to happen to get that home market ready without having, you know, complete staging. So it's kind of a partial and we talk about what should stay, what we need to put in storage, you know, what we need to repaint, maybe a new light fixture. And I do that. And that's kind of something that I think is unique because there are a lot of staging companies and they'll just come in there and, you know, they work with vacant homes. There's nothing in there. But if somebody is going to live through the process, then they need to make sure it's going to be the best it can be. I offer a consultation package on that. So
wow, that makes that sounds like a great value. Well, on that note, I want to thank you for being here. And
no,
you know,
thank you. This is so exciting to share.
I'm so glad that you came too and did this. Tell us, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, the quickest and easiest way would probably be through my website, and I spell it a little differently. It's Authentic with a K, so AUTHENTIK home.com is the easiest way. There's a little contact me form, and we can set up a phone call or we can email back and forth. That's a great way. And that's really usually how I start out with. I'm on Instagram also, so I'm trying to pump that up a little bit, so you can direct message me through there too.
And how do they find you on Instagram?
It's Authentic Home.
Oh, the same. Okay.
It's pretty easy because I spell it differently. And so the name Authentic Home is kind of an interesting way that that came to be. I had kind of an epiphany, I guess, when I was really creating it, that, you know, my whole brand and vibe is really being authentic myself and helping my clients be authentic as well. But of course, Authentic Home was already taken, the domain name, long time ago, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an original concept. But I thought, I'm going to spell it a little differently. I'm going to spell it with a K. And I thought, it's kind of cool because it's kind of beatnik-y, right? Yeah. And I'm kind of got that vibe going. And then I was doing some research on the word authentic, and it was originally spelled with a K. It's actually a Greek word. So I was like, well, I am the most authentic.
Wow.
Because it was spelled with a K before. So, hey, look at that. So anyways, I thought that was kind of a funny story to share with your listeners.
Yeah, the irony that it's really supposed to be with a K.
Yeah. Well, I mean, supposed to be, but,
well,
you know.
Originally.
That was the original recipe there.
Well, fair enough. So,
yeah.
Hey, any listeners, I hopefully you found this as valuable as I did. Please contact Andrea if you have any questions at the website or the Instagram. And again, thank you. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure. It was my first podcast, but this is the subject I am the most passionate about. And I hope that your listeners, if they take away something today, is maybe they think differently about hiring an interior designer and really realizing that it can be for a lot of different lifestyles. It's not just for the lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Well, that makes sense. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And please subscribe to the show if you have not. And I want to thank you, Andrea. And everybody, take care. Stay tuned for another episode of The Jones Zone coming out next week. We're signing off.
Thanks for tuning into The Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.